On a normal half hour show, you might have 20, 24, 25 hours of footage. On that finale, we had, it was like towards 55 hours of footage for a half hour show.
Yeah, at that point, it was the biggest thing I had ever cut. It was like, you know, a 12 minute scene, 15 characters, one room. We had a body double for Tina Fey. So you're cutting around the, like, it was so complicated and so long that it was just like, how do we do this?
Have you ever wondered what it takes to work on big budget Hollywood films and TV shows? What it takes to make the leap from small productions to big productions? What it'd be like to actually craft the most watched and compelling content of our day? My name is Gavin Buckland, and this is the Post Production Club podcast. I've been working in the film industry for 9 years, almost a decade now, and my journey as a filmmaker has had its ups and downs, which is a different story for a different episode. But at the core, I'm most passionate about post-production. The final phase of the process where the editors, VFX artists, 3D wizards, sound designers, and colorists, these often unseen and unsung people, transform the raw pieces of a movie or a TV show into something that evokes emotion. I found myself having interesting conversations with these people that work in post at a high level, so I thought I'd start to record these conversations and share it here. I firmly believe that the world's already got its fair share of podcasters in love with the sound of their own voice, so I'm hoping not to add more noise to the mix, but I am really excited to shine a spotlight on the amazing community of post-production professionals, these often unseen rock stars of movie magic. So who better to kick off episode 2 with than the editing duo of Hulu's hit show Only Murders in the Building? It's got Selena Gomez, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. I'm sure you've seen it. Today we've got seasoned editor Shelley Westerman and young but talented editor Peyton Koch. Shelley is one of the most humble people, yet she is incredibly experienced and connected to some of the most foundational editors of iconic films. Peyton is up and coming. He transitioned from being an assistant editor on seasons 1 and 2 for Only Murderers to a lead editor on season 3, and they're both currently in the thick of it on season 4. They share about their journey into editing and streaming for TV, their editing process, what it's like to be a woman in post, how to work better with those in production, like directors and producers, and a ton more. And lastly, today's episode was produced by Luke Fritz, who's our new producer for the show. I just want to give a huge shout out and thanks to him for all the work that he's done to make this show even more legit. He's a rad dude and will most likely be making appearances on future episodes. So keep your eyes and ears out. All right, let's dive in.
All right, Peyton, Shelley, thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, you're welcome. We're happy.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be talking to two people at once. Like, this is going to be so fun. Okay, so just kind of diving right in, I'd love to hear a little bit about your guys' journey into the world of editorial for larger budget films and TV shows. Out of all the pieces of the filmmaking process that you could have chosen, why did you choose editing?
Wow.
I love that question. For me, you know, I grew up in LA and was always a film kid. You know, I have family in the film industry, so I was always, you know, around it in the world. And I loved, I was a computer kid and, you know, nerdy tech kid in the family. So I was always on iMovie and making little films. And I just loved putting it together. Like, the puzzle was always the most fun part for me. And so as I got older and was going to college, I knew that I wanted to do film, and editing was the emphasis I wanted to focus on. And so it just was always there. Like, I found that medium of storytelling to fit best with my personality, and it just made the most sense for me as a human being to do this kind of work. And so I went into college and studied editing, and boom, here we are.
Nice.
Working professionally. It's amazing.
Wow.
I had a slightly different path. I grew up in Atlanta. I worked at the Federal Reserve Bank for almost 11 years in computer operations. I had a family who loved movies, and I was into photography, and I would volunteer at independent media outlets in Atlanta. I knew I had to get to New York or LA if I really wanted to work in film. So there was an opportunity for the Federal Reserve to transfer me to New York. So I took it, got settled in, still working my computer operations job, and I would volunteer at Film Independent or anything I could do to get connected to the New York world. At one point, I took a leave of absence from the Fed because I was like, I can't take this anymore. I got to figure this out. So I'm interning. I found a place to intern through this Film Independent. Someone said, hey, Spin Cycle Post in New York City needs interns. So here I am, mid-30s, stocking Coke machines and answering phones. And someone said, they started teaching me film skills. Brian Cates, who's a very big editor, taught me how to use a film synchronizer. Myron Kirstein, who's, you know, we're all still friends to this day, this tight-knit New York community. So I was offered a job as a film assistant editor on an awesome movie called Velvet Goldmine. And at that time, the Fed said, you know, hey, you got to come back to work. Where are you? I said, oh, by the way, I have a film job now. That was my first venture into filmmaking. Editing was just a natural extension at that time of like organizational skills, project management skills, my love of movies, the photography. It was really interesting at the cusp of that. It was just going digital. People were still cutting on the Avid, or starting to cut on the Avid, I should say. But we were doing 35 millimeter work print assemblies to watch the movie on film that you were cutting on the Avid. So in retrospect, I was learning technically about the same time everybody else was. So I wasn't like too far behind. So I kind of came up in this wave of learning Avid and getting into editing that way.
That is fascinating. I'm curious for you, Shelley, how have you navigated the dynamics of the editing room and the film industry at large, really, which has been traditionally more male-dominated, I would say, especially in post?
I agree. You know, I thought about that a lot. I was very lucky in that Richard Marks was one of my first editors, you know, big editors that I worked with on big movies. He came up under Dee Dee Allen, so he was one of Dee Dee's boys, as they call it. So he had this great respect for women. And then I had these amazing female role models. Christine Vachon was my producer on Velvet Goldmine, Nora Ephron. I worked with Geraldine Pironi, who cut all of Robert Altman's movies. So very early on, I had this female empowerment kind of normalized for me. But quite honestly, to this day, even Peyton was reminding me that oftentimes, you know, I'll be working with a male coworker and I'll have that thought, oh, he knows more than I do. He's going to be better at this than I am. And Peyton's like, what, are you crazy? Why are you thinking those thoughts? So it's a constant reminder to me. I have to think that thought, recognize it, and then say, no, I am good enough. So I don't know. Better. It's a constant battle. You know, I don't, we find a lot of comfort in these women, female kind of film groups, you know, like support that way too. There's a lot of organizations or women's kind of groups that support each other to help us, you know, from those thoughts.
That's amazing. I mean, when it comes to editorial, I feel like the standard of a great editor have been women since the beginning.
Yeah,
I mean, even in film school, I remember, you know, you learn the history and it was a women's job back in the day because, you know, what did they correlate it with, like cooking, or like it was like the kitchen, like the chore work of the physical editing, you know, it was a women's job, which I always found fascinating how the tides changed and it became a male-dominated industry. It's very interesting how the origin was female-based.
Do you guys have any, or Shelley, do you have any foundational editors that you really look up to?
Again, like Richie Marks was huge. You know, he cut Broadcast News, Terms of Endearment, As Good as It Gets. He worked on The Godfather. That was amazing to have that as one of my first editors that I worked with. Absolutely. And even Geraldine Pironi, we worked on Jesus Son together, and she was just very empowering, very kind and sharing knowledge. And the same with Nora Ephron. Like when we would work on films, feature films, you would be in the room with the directors all day long for a year. You'd have all that time to get to know each other. So she was always very complimentary, you know, smart as can be, It was a very empowering experience throughout.
How about you, Peyton?
I would say an editor that I've looked up to since I was younger, and like, well, one of the movies that, you know, really defined my love for editing was Whiplash when I was in college and that came out, and it was cut by Tom Cross, who's actually one of Shelley's friends, which is so cool. And you know, he was just always a very inspirational editor I looked up to. I love all of his work, and it really showed me the power of editing and how you could really change the way a story is told, you know, through this medium. And I always just find his work inspiring, so he's one.
Yes.
And he's a very nice person and mentors, and we were all baby assistant editors together back in New York. So to wow. see everyone thriving is phenomenal.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Peyton, I'm curious for you, how has it been transitioning from assistant editor on past projects to an editor on Only Murders in the Building? I'm curious to hear the best and worst parts between the two roles.
they're all best. They're all amazing. No, I had such a wonderful journey coming up from a post PA to assistant editor, you know, to now editing in the span of what, 6 years or so. And it's just been so amazing. And I've been lucky enough to be working with people like Shelley and to have her as my mentor. And I'm so grateful and so lucky to have been, you know, in the right place in the right time and put the hours in and get to where I am. And so, you know, the transition has actually been kind of seamless because Shelley brought me on Only Murder season 2 as her assistant, but we had, you know, we had worked together in the past in the Ryan Murphy world, and we had already established this sort of collaborative relationship between us. And so when she reached out to me to come do season 2 as her assistant, there was also the perk of let's edit everything together and take all the scenes and, you know, do versions and everything. I'll give you notes and we'll learn and you'll grow. And I was like, you know, done instantly. I'm coming, sign me up. And so then, you know, throughout the course of season 2, we cut every scene together and, you know, or, you know, individually we did our own versions, and then we would hop on our Evercast, you know, streaming thing and review stuff and talk. And then by the time we were on episode 8 and then the finale of season 2, we you know, John, our showrunner, who we had been working with together, you know, he was able to see me and see the work I had done. And by that point on episode 8 and episode 10, we got to share editor credit. So that was like the first, you know, beginning of the transition. And then by the time we wrapped season 2, John was like, well, you're going to do, you know, your own episodes on season 3, which was just like, you know, crazy. And still every day I'm like, how am I working on this show right now? I have a bit of imposter syndrome sometimes, but you know, the transition was easy because essentially I was doing both jobs at the same time. And so I slowly have just started to let go of the assistant stuff. And I still am very, you know, self-sufficient as an editor. I try to do lots of things and make my assistant's life easy. But I'm slowly letting go of all of the, you know, those things. So it's in progress, but it's been really easy and seamless in that sense from working on this show and getting to be with Shelley throughout it.
But what he's not telling you, and what he told me just recently, because we were talking about how people make that transition, and he worked night and day and weekends to edit. He would do his job and get paid for his assistant job for sure, because we never advocate anyone working for free. But he took advantage of that opportunity, and he didn't tell me. He's like, you didn't know I was working all night and all weekend, but I wasn't going to let that opportunity go. And so he really put the effort in.
When you have that opportunity, you have to take it, because if you don't take it, then whoever your editor is or whoever's that person that's going to give you that opportunity or bump up, they're going to recognize that you're not taking it, you know, by the reins. And, you know, I always tell people, like, tell people what you want, and by, you know, action speak louder than words. So it's like, if they see you putting in all of that hard work and effort, they know you want it, and then you're going to get more opportunity. And so, it just all worked out with Shelley, and I'm so grateful to be with her.
But you could also see his improvement. You could see the work getting better and better and better because of that way that we worked. It wasn't just like one scene in a half hour episode. It was like, you have to do the whole thing to get the whole experience to really take it up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
I love your guys' dynamic. You can tell that you really are co-collaborators. And filmmaking is such a team sport, but I feel like you don't often see an editing duo credited on a project. And so I'm really curious if you guys could say more what it's like to collaborate together as co-editors on the project.
For me, it's heaven. I mean, I've been doing this a while, and I'm like, really, it's like, what's the point if you can't share it with other people? Like, I don't need to keep accumulating credits or have someone tell me I'm good, I did a good job. It's so much better when you can open yourself up and let go ego-wise and say, hey, like, come on, let's do this together. Not only with Peyton, but with our assistants, with the sound department, with the music department. You get them involved early on. A lot of times in television, it's so fast. You're doing these episodes quickly. You give it to the sound department. They have 5 days to do their work and then go to a mix. That's like a terrible use of their creative talent. So whatever we can do to open ourselves up to bring everyone in at the beginning, I feel like the work is infinitely better.
Mm-hmm. And on our, you know, personal working relationship with each other, it is unique in the sense that we've been doing it for years at this point. And you know, a lot of times if there are co-editors, it's just because it's getting crazy in the schedule and everyone has to hop on, you know, that kind of thing. But we have this established creative collaborative relationship, and so like the dynamic between us makes it easy to pass stuff back and forth. There is this level of trust and comfortability where I can play Shelly anything and know that, like, you know, even if I think it's not great, that she'll still give positive feedback in a way and help shape it in a way that's better, and vice versa. You know, we get, for example, on season 3 last year when we're doing the finale, it's like we're on with John for hours and we're working on stuff, and then I'm doing it and then I'm like, Shelly, you have to tap in, like I can't keep going, and then she'll go for a little bit and then she's like, I'm out, you're in. And then so it's like this like give and take that is so easy for us to, and because like I think our sensibilities and styles are similar, obviously, given that I learned a lot from Shelly and have probably taken on some of her style. But like, you know, we just understand each other in a way that I think is, you know, very simpatico, and it just makes it easy for us to, you know, go back and forth and make something great.
And how lucky is that?
Yeah, very, very. And especially, you know, like post-pandemic and like working from home, which obviously there are lots of perks to working from home for us in editorial. But the biggest miss is like the community and like the having the office hangouts or a coffee walk or getting to be able to go sit on someone's couch and hang out. But because we have this relationship, it's like we get to keep doing it just through Zoom and through whatever. And so that's like the also very nice part about getting to work together.
Was there ever a moment it was particularly challenging working together?
Oh, every day. Yeah, I think the finale of season 2 was very challenging. On a normal half hour show, you might have 20, 24, 25 hours of footage. On that finale, we had, oh, it was like towards 55 hours of footage for a half hour show. So it was very, very challenging in terms of culling that down to 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that scene was so huge in the end of season 2. It was at that point it was the biggest thing I had ever cut. It was like, you know, a 12-minute scene, 15 characters, one room. We had a body double for Tina Fey, so you're cutting around the, like, it was so complicated and so long that it was just like, how do we do this? But then, you know, you just break it up in chunks and you parse it out, and then again we do our thing. And that was probably the most challenging thing. Well, also, I mean, if we're going to talk season 3, one of the most challenging things was that split screen that everyone has seen and we are so proud of. We love that split screen. But it was very challenging, and we're so lucky to have our great directors, Bob Puccini and Sherry Springer Berman, who came in with such a vision, you know, in pre-production, and allowed us to really execute it in a way that was you know, made it so much easier for us in post. You know, they came in and we made these title cards and placed the whole thing out, how the frames were going to move. And then they took that to production and figured out how to shoot it and how they're, you know, it was just this crazy all hands in collaborative thing that really was so instrumental with the work that they did, and then having all, you know, and our assistants helped so much with building that, and that was just extremely challenging, and we're so proud of how that came out. I think it's amazing.
And in addition, I had been Bob and Sherry's assistant editor back in New York in the day, so to reconnect with them was just joyous. You know, the first thing Bob said was like, "You're a blonde now." It's like, what? I hadn't talked to him in since leaving New York and coming to LA. So that also gave us a great shorthand, because we did the little catch up on our lives, and then we were able to say, hey, here's what's working, here's where we're having challenges, here's where we could make improvements. So they got a good idea of what was going on in other episodes, and you know, the set dynamic. So they went in stronger, and we were stronger also, because then we could communicate with them throughout the shooting process. Normally you have an email introduction to your director, and like, that's it, until then you get all your dailies and do your cut, and then you show them your cut, and they have like 2 days to work with you. It's crazy. So with having Bob and Sherry and knowing them, like that episode, Sid's Probe, was just divine.
That's so cool. You kind of answered a little bit, but I was curious if it was pretty normal for you guys to be involved in normally with the show, or was that kind of like a, hey, this is going to be complex, and so we have a specific vision for it?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, well, I think at this point, you know, it's our third season on the show, and so we have a shorthand with showrunner John Hoffman, and he really trusts us to, you know, keep telling the story for him. And for that specific example, yeah, it was, you know, we received that script and it immediately became we need to take action on this and really plan it in pre-production to make sure that it's executed in a way where we're not having to, you know, fix it in post. And so it was a very, you know, they do allow us to, I mean, you know, the in TV, the scripts are coming out fast and there's rewrites and whatnot, but because of how great everyone on the show is, they allow us, they do these Zoom table reads and they invite us to listen. And like, that's very helpful in us hearing, you know, the delivery and how it's going to play out. And that gives you a sense of like how the episode's going to go, the timing and whatnot. So that's already a pre-production thing that they give us an insight to. That's very, very helpful. But yeah, you know, I think it's like situational, you know, if a script comes in and there's something that's like a major thing that they're going to need. Like, for example, I just did something in episode 8 of season 4 that we're doing where they had to shoot something and I had to turn it around really quick because they want to project it, you know? So there are certain things that come in where they rely on editorial to turn things around quick so that they can implement it in production and whatnot. So it is always very open communication, and, you know, we're always here to just do whatever production needs to make it, you know, the best way possible.
But I've also advocated in the Ryan Murphy world, and then, you know, here in Only Murders, that editors are at least invited to these meetings that are now on Zoom because of the pandemic. So there's a production meetings. We might not have ever been able to go to those, but if we can pull it up on Zoom, and, you know, we might be busy doing something else, but if we're invited to listen, you can kind of hear what's going on and what they're planning and get heads up. Oh, they're going to do this and this with green screens. Okay, then I'm going to have to prepare for this. And same thing with concept meetings. So they'll do a production meeting, then I think a concept meeting comes before a production meeting. And then there's a tone meeting specifically for the episode. But I've advocated for editors to be invited to all of the meetings, even if it's not their episode, if they have time to go, so that they can hear. And when they're talking tone meetings, because of the structure of Only Murders and the, you know, interweaving of the stories over the 8 episodes or 10 episodes, there's always information to be gleaned from that. And the more you know, and the more you're visible, and the more you see other crew members, and the more the producers see you, you know, you've got a better shot at it. I keep saying, like, in the old days, like a grandma. In the old days, we used to sit there and watch dailies together, and we would talk about things. You know, that's gone. The schedules are fast. No, you know, communication, you have to really make an effort to be part of the team and be part of the conversation and glean all of that information. That's crucial to how you approach your job.
That makes total sense. it's crazy how you have to advocate for yourself. I hear you guys doing that a lot, and just take it upon yourself to be proactive in the situation. I'm curious, for this show in particular, how did the editorial decisions help in shaping that final narrative? You've talked a lot about how the directors and showrunner had an awesome vision, you know, coming into things, which is super, super cool and makes your jobs a ton easier. But I'm curious if there's ever a moment that your editorial decisions changed the trajectory of the story for the writers, directors, or even John as the showrunner had planned. Was he like, oh, that was not what I intended, but I love that so much more?
Huh. I know. We were talking about the season two finale, and that we had a script, obviously. We had all the footage. Peyton and I labored over that thing forever, made all of our choices. We'd play it MOS over and over and over again to make sure that we're telling the story and we're in the right place visually. When we showed the episode to the producers, they basically said, oh my God, we love it. Great. And we're like, hold on, what do you mean great? Aren't we going to pick this apart and redo anything? And they're like, no, we love it, it's great. And Peyton and I were taken aback. We're like, sure, we're proud of our work, but like, wow, you're not going to change it?
Yeah, they were happy. They were happy. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, I think like there's always, you know, happy surprises when the work that you do is what they intended, or even not what they intended, but they're so happy with it that they're like, this is amazing, you were able to take that footage and make it into something. But I don't know if there's ever like an exact moment where like an editorial decision is necessarily changing the overall story. Like, you know, the scripts are like out and they've had all this stuff planned, but of course like we reorder scripts, and like, you know, in the process of the episode there might be reorders and like having this beat land before this, and you know, there's lots of Frankenstein work, as they call, to you know, help the story move through the episode. But yeah, you know, it's just fun to be collaborative with them, and then know that they do trust us, and the decisions that we make are, you know, intend to be the right ones. So that's always nice.
Yeah, yeah, sounds we like recently you guys did some inner cutting of scenes, you know, where it's scripted scene, and then on the script page it was great, but when we were it's on this season stuff, when we put it together we're like, oh, for God's sakes, I cannot watch this scene after scene. So we just did our own recut and intertwined the scenes, and they loved it.
That's so cool. That's for season four.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. I think a lot of times directors, producers, they want to work with editors, like an outside editor, but sometimes you'll see like a director end up just doing the editorial for their own project, whether that's commercial or short film or even, you know, like feature. I hear a lot of times they're like, oh, I really want to, but it's hard for me to let go of that control, or how do I, you know, direct them in something that I just know inherently how to do. I'm curious what advice you guys would give to those producers, directors, or even DPs when it comes to working with editors.
That's such a good question. Because I do feel that as well. I always find it interesting when a director does choose to edit their own stuff. I think like that's amazing. And, you know, from my experience, like if I were to ever venture out into directing, I'm sure I would have that issue as well of letting go and letting someone else, you know, make those decisions when I already know the decisions, or I know how I want it to be, you know, so I understand that. But I also think like letting someone else take over your initial vision, because, you know, when you go into production, you have a vision, or you have a way that you're going to do things, but it never fully translates. You know, there's always things that are going to change, or, you know, that don't work in production logistically. And so then you have to roll with it. And I think when you bring in another set of eyes that isn't so stuck on the initial vision that you wanted, you're able to see so many different ways that it can be done, and maybe ways that are better. And so I think like allowing someone who is a professional and they do this for their craft and they're passionate about it to just give that trust over and let them take a stab at it, you know, you might end up finding things in your project that you didn't know were gonna be there. And like having that new eyes, like it just gives you a whole new perspective, which I think is really important to have in this, you know, in this world of filmmaking.
And I think you have to play the politics too. You have to go in a little bit gentle. You have to let them know, I'm not here to redo everything. What you've done is wonderful. Let's improve it. If you go in like blazing hot and like, I'm going to tear everything up, but we're going to start from scratch, that's not going to go over well. So it's a lot about reading the room, as they say, playing the politics, looking at the personalities and assuring them you're on their side.
Yeah, that's really good. So then on the flip side of that, what advice would you give to editors when it comes to working on this type of content and even collaborating with other directors or producers and stakeholders within a project?
Really being open to collaboration, like listening. My main thing is, are you listening? You know, I know a lot of editors like go to the last take and like they do their thing and they're not listening. So like I try to teach Peyton, you know, as we're watching dailies, you're listening to what's going on set. You're listening to what the director or the producers are asking for. You're reading the script notes. You're really trying to be open and observant. And, you know, you are a detective. So kind of listening to everyone and trying to take all that information and put together, you know, your vision too, but it's not about you. It's about the project and the story and all the players.
I also think like coming up in the Ryan Murphy camp with Shelley, you know, there's a certain expectation over there for when you turn in a cut and, you know, sorry, dog groaning in the background if you heard that. There's a certain expectation to the cut that you turn in. And, you know, our job as editors, when we're turning in a cut to a director or a producer, it's you want to sell it. You want it to be, you want it to play, you want it to be the best possible version. And so we do the temp VFX as best we can. We do all the sound design and we're scoring and you're giving them the best possible vision. So I would say like to editors, you know, like do the most work, you know, like put in all the sound effects, do a dialogue mix, like make it sound like as close to a finished product as you can, because then when someone's watching it, it's so much easier to like buy in, you know, you're like, wow, this is working. This is all really good. And so I think if you're, you know, you're just coming in and yeah, I'm a picture editor, I'm just cutting the picture. The idea of editing and filmmaking, it's much bigger than that. It's bigger than just cutting the picture. It's telling a story and it's creating a whole piece that is going to, you know, highlight all of this talent from all, you know, aspects, the directors, the production designers, the DP, the actors, like all of it, you know? And so that's also what's so rewarding, I think, about editing and being the person putting the project together. You know, it's like you get to see all of the amazing work and then present it and feel so great about the work you put in. And, you know, it's just beautiful.
I love that. Okay, so I've got a series of questions where I want to like hear about the craziness or like challenge or a disaster of your experience of the industry. So I kind of will like keep it very open-ended, but I'm just curious if there was like a project or a moment that was like a complete disaster that was, you're like, why am I like, this industry is nuts. Why am I, what am I doing here? I'm curious if you have anything like that. It doesn't have to be just only murders related.
There's so many good disasters and bad disasters. We're problem solvers. We're supposed to kind of deal with disaster on a daily basis. I can tell you on one project, my coworker and I worked ourselves almost to death. She got shingles and I was in the urgent care. And if that was a turning point, I was like, I can't, like, this is nuts. I can't do this anymore. It was, yeah, I had the director bringing me chicken noodle soup. And it's like, that's not worth it. That's not worth it at all.
Yeah. I don't think I have enough experience in this field yet to really have too many horror stories to share. But, you know, yeah, like Shelley said, like every project, there's going to be, you know, you always think, oh, the next one's going to be so smooth. Or like, oh, I'll go here in a little bit. There's always something, you know, it's unavoidable. And so I think the things that you look for when joining a project or like, you know, collaborating with people, it comes down to the personalities. Like if you mesh well with people and you have a vibe and you get along, it's like, even if there are you know, trouble areas or disasters, you're going to work through it together, and it'll be, you'll work it out. We always work it out. As they say, fix it in post, and we do.
But I have noticed, like, my normal personality, like, I laugh a lot and I'm fun, but then we also bitch a lot all day. We're like, oh my God, can you believe that shot? Or why did they frame this that way? Or what's wrong with that? You know, we're always bitching. But I've also noticed when shit really hits the fan, I get really calm. And I'm like, okay, this is the real shit. So shut up. Don't bitch about it. And then how do we start solving problems? So I've noticed that about myself. And I think that's definitely what it takes. Because you know what? In the end, the film industry is not run like any normal business structure. It's full of artists who are vulnerable and emotional. Everybody's got some kind of stake in a project that's different from everybody else's. So yeah, you need to have a lot of patience and kind of look and see what's going on and try to be part of the problem-solving team. Because they're disasters of all levels, you know, personality-wise, people getting mad and walking off set. Directors getting kicked out of the editing room and recuts being done, like, without them. Like, it's a political minefield every single day.
So how do you guys manage that work-life balance? How do you keep yourself healthy?
Well, I think, like, post-COVID, you know, there was a real shift in post-production because we all do work from home. I mean, there's obviously some people that work in office, but I think a majority of people still are working remote, and it's given us such flexibility in the schedule and the freedom to, you know, a lot of the time you turn in a cut and then you're waiting for a producer to come give notes or have a session with, and then, you know, they're so busy, it's that they're on set or whatever, and oh, I'll be with you at 3 o'clock, and then it's 4. Oh, I'll be there at 5, and then tomorrow. And so it's like you're able to take care of yourself. You can go have dinner with your family, or you can go take your dogs on a walk or do some laundry or whatever it is, you know? And so, like, it allows you to just have yourself back. Cause it's like, you know, when you're in an office, it's like you're sitting there and you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and then you're working and then you're waiting and then you don't have, you're just kind of stuck there. So I think, like, with us being remote, it's really improved a lot of people's work-life balance, because you can have both, like, and you can set your own schedule working from home. You know, if I decide, oh, you know, I'm going to stop at 4 p.m. and then take my whole afternoon and have dinner, and then I want to work again at 9 p.m., I can, you know, it's here. It's not a problem. So I think it just allows you to be free in a sense of, like, building your own schedule and not, you know, sitting in your room in an office for, you know, 14 hours and not eating, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, because people can get, you get trapped, you get, when you're in a zone and you want to keep going. And so I think there's been a big, big shift in, like, the mental, physical health of post-production people post-pandemic, which was one positive from COVID.
One positive, but, like, to be honest, like, it's almost upon, you have to take that upon yourself. Because even though I've been working at home, there's plenty of times I haven't been to the gym in 2 months. I'll sit here and work for hours without eating. I'll just drink chai tea lattes until I'm sugared and caffeined out. So I think it's a daily struggle, to be honest. I don't know how to find a... Definitely it's better working from home, but the flip side of that is you are not with your coworkers. Like, thank God I know Peyton, and I know my assistant, and I know Peyton's assistant. But the other people, we don't, you know, a couple of them I didn't even meet in person. Last year, I didn't meet my assistant in person till the end of the season. I'm like, whoa, that's what you look like in person.
No, but you're right. You do have to have that level of accountability for yourself, which is hard with this work. And, you know, when you're working these big hours, you're right. Well, but I also, you know, I live at home right now with family. And so, like, I have people in the house, and, like, it helps me, like, I can pull out for a second, or they're like, hey, can you come and do this? And I'm like, okay. And then I can take a sec, you know, I'm forced into that. If I was alone or living alone, I'm sure it would be more of a struggle.
And I haven't talked to one person who has nailed it down. So it's just, like, it is constantly a thing to keep tabs on. And that's why I love to just, like, pick everyone's brain about it. Like, how are you managing it? How are you finding, like, ways to keep your head above water? Because it is, like you said, this industry is full of artists, and we're passionate, and we're also fickle. And, you know, I'm sure there's been times where you guys have felt like, oh, I just want to give this all this up and just go do an easy job that gives me 9 to 5 and, you know, I can just zone out. But I guess I want to encourage, like, it is worth it. It is.
Oh yeah. Don't worry. Yeah. I'm not going to do a 9 to 5 anytime soon.
When you're out, like, in your house in a, you know, pajamas and flip flops on a Zoom table read, and you're like, I'm sitting here watching Meryl Streep and Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez and Paul Rudd and Matthew Broderick. Yeah, you're like, life's just good.
Yeah. I was talking to one guy and I was just like, oh man, it sounds like a lot of work. He was a producer, and he's like, we're not digging ditches. He's like, our life could be so much harder, you know? Like, this is
physical labor, no thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm curious for you guys as you look ahead to the future, especially with the influence of artificial intelligence and machine learning, like, what are your guys' kind of thoughts about that? I wonder if you can speak to the editors that might be a little bit more afraid of what the future looks like in the space of editorial.
Ooh, well, I'm kind of one of them. So
yes,
I don't know.
Well, we had a slight disagreement over using AI for temp ADR, you know, for temp dialogue recordings. I was like, absolutely not. Like, if there was any way, like, a cut went to Steve Martin, Martin Short, or anybody, it was with, and that's not their voice, plus that's what they just fought for. No. Whereas Peyton was more interested in exploring it as a possibility. He was more open to it. He's like, oh, that would be a great way to get some temp dialogue in. So it was interesting. Our two reactions were so polar opposite.
And again, on that, you know, that's just my idea of, like, presenting the best version of a cut. And I was like, that could be very helpful, you know, helping sell it and not hearing my voice in the cut, or whoever, my assistant playing Selena Gomez or whatever it is. And so I was open to looking into that, but then it was like, oh, you have to sign up and you have to put in a credit card and you have to ingest it. It was too much. And then I was like, I'm not doing this. Fuck that. You know, like, and for editorial, like, I know that people talk about, I know that there are softwares being implemented that are, you know, able to do whatever it is, if it's script sync or they're able to manage your media. I haven't looked into it enough to where I know, like, what the developments are, but I do know that there is a, you know, conversation around that, you know, AI will eventually take an assistant editor's job, or it all is going to become so mechanical and technical to where you'll be able to hit a button and it'll start cutting a scene or whatever. And I mean, that stuff is frightening, but I don't think that you can take away the human element that we put into storytelling. And, like, a computer sure could cut a scene, technically they could, but you're not going to get that human feeling of emotion and, like, the connection between the shots and the characters that we put into it. You know, there's a feeling, and I don't think AI can really capture that.
No, we're looking at every breath, every eye movement. My favorite shot in one of the episodes last season was Paul Rudd just did this little eye raise with his eyebrows, and I was obsessed with it. The tiniest little thing. Like, I don't know that AI is going to give you those very special, tender human moments.
No, they're just going to go, oh, yes, cut from the wide to that single shot and then over there and you're done. You know, it's very mechanical, I feel like. So, I mean, who knows? You know, the technology advances so fast, and already today, you know, with the pandemic, look how much stuff evolved. Like, we're able to do this from home all over. You know, Shelley was in Florida for the last two seasons doing the show. And so that's already crazy that we're working from all over the country together, you know, from our homes, making this show through technology. And, you know, so that's already, it's all crazy.
Yeah, it is absolutely nuts. I love that anecdote though about Paul Rudd. A neural network's not going to be able to, like, catch that. And I do agree. I do definitely see the usefulness that technology can be as a tool to help us get to a place quicker, but there is not a future of compelling content where the human is completely removed.
No.
And even I recently saw Carol Littleton speak. She's a very famous editor, and she was saying the biggest switch from digital, you know, from, like, cutting film to digital, was you lost that time to think. you thought about cuts and thought about where you were going before you did it. So I think AI, that's like exponentially that loss of thought and feeling and emotion.
That's really good. I think it's interesting that there is, in technological advancement, there is something to grieve, even if it becomes adapted and widely used as a tool to help you get to a place quicker in your art. There's still something lost.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can look back and go, there was a similar change in from like analog to digital editing. There's something lost there. That's really interesting. Okay, so I really just like, I think wrapping it up here, I'm curious if there's anything upcoming that you guys are excited about to work on.
We're looking at a few things, but we're both obsessed with Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, oh my God. Have you watched
it? No, it's on the list.
Gavin,
it's
on the list. Oh, tonight.
It's so okay. Good.
We're like, we want to work on anything like Baby Reindeer.
It's a hard watch. I watched it all in one day as well, and it's intense. But that kind of storytelling is so powerful. Like, I was just blown away by how that was done. I would love to work on a project like that. You know, I'm open to, I mean, I have my only editing credit and ventures thus far as an editor is only Murders. And so I'm really just excited about whatever other opportunities are presented to me. And like, I want to have a versatile resume. I want to do drama, thriller, stay in comedy. I want to do a movie, you know. I'm so open and just excited about whatever comes. And, you know, I'm texting and calling with my agent every week about like, what are you looking for? What's happening? What's next? I'm just very excited. So we'll see. It's all out there.
And I think what benefited us from working in the Ryan Murphy world is they never saw you as a genre editor. You know, they're like, oh, here you go. Here's Ratched. Oh, here you go. Here's Pose. Here's a Versace. Here's, you know, Politician. You could do comedy, drama, thriller, horror. You were an editor, and that was just such an invaluable experience. So I know a lot of my friends get pigeonholed, like, oh, you've been on comedy, so you're a comedy editor. It's like, no, I'm an editor, and I happen to be doing comedy right now. So, like, same as Peyton, I'm open to doing anything that's interesting with a good script, and really with nice people. Like, this experience with Only Murders, with John Hoffman, our showrunner. I mean, you can look at all the interviews about John Hoffman, and everybody says the same thing about how nice he is. And he commands this beautiful, like, set where everybody is kind to each other. It's like, that's important for me right now. It's like working with nice people. And I want to work with, you know, really visual artists.
That's cool. There is, one final like piece of advice that you guys could give to those working in post, just specifically editors, what would you say?
I know. I always say it's like nurture those relationships. I can't tell you the first thing I do when I get on a project after I get, you know, like a couple days of dailies is I reach out to everyone, costume, sound, production design, and say, oh my God, Selena's dress in that episode is phenomenal. Oh my gosh, that sound is so good. You're calling them and giving them a compliment that's earnest and true. You're not making it up. But instead of them looking at their inbox going, oh shit, what's up with editorial? What do they want? There's a problem. You know, you're starting out with something nice and you mean it. And you start developing those relationships as a way to honor their work too. When we're editing, I'm not also, you know, I'm focused on story, of course, and performance, but I'm also looking for moments to honor. Oh, if I went to a wide shot there, you could see what Patrick did with this lighthouse. Or, oh, if I went, you know, a little bit wider here, you could see that whole dress that Dana went to so much trouble to create. You know, like, you're looking for ways to honor each other's work and what you do.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't have much advice I could give to, like, editors per se, but like I talk to a lot of young people or people coming out of college that are wanting to get into post or wanting to be assistants or PAs or whatever. And the thing I always tell people, which I think I did say earlier, is just tell people what you want to do, because when people know what you want, they can see your passion and then you're going to get opportunity. But if you just sit there quietly and expect to just, you know, be handed stuff, like, that's never going to happen. You have to make yourself known and, like, know what you want. And, like, so I tell people, be annoying, send the email. Like, the worst you can do is get rejected and say no. But, like, I think in this industry, when people see that you want something and that you're passionate, those are the kind of people that you want to collaborate with and surround yourself with. And so, yeah, I just tell people, be annoying. You know, that's my advice. Just do it. Just tell people what you want and, like, you know, put yourself out there.
That's nice. So good. They say that a film is made three times, right? When it's written, when it's shot, and when it's edited. And a friend of mine really did call editors the final director. And so I think it's really cool that you guys have been able to shape a lot of the stories that we've watched, and especially with Only Murders. And I'm just so grateful for you guys being willing to give the time and come and share your thoughts and experience and everything. Final question is just to be like, where can we keep up with you guys and your work? What would be the best way to stay in touch with you guys?
I would guess, like, Instagram, I guess.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, yeah, probably just keep up with us. Yeah, I would guess
Instagram. I'm not a good poster, but Peyton's trying to get me better on posting about our project. Instagram, IMDb, always lists our credits. Yeah.
What are your guys' handles, just for those listening?
What am I?
Mine is Peyton, Payton, J, Koch, Koch.
God, what's my handle?
I think you're like Film Girl.
I think I'm Film Girl 13.
That is awesome.
I think that's me. I don't even know my own handle. See, Gavin, I need to be better at social media.
Which is so awesome, because it sounds like someone who made social media, like, back in, like, the 90s. Like, that's, like, probably very close to what my handle was, you know, but, like, you're just entering into it, and now it feels real.
If you also just search your name, you also pop up.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Show the Westerman.
Thanks.
Okay, guys, well, thank you again so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks, Gavin. Thanks, you too.
You too. Thank you.